Thank you so much, Dr. Sankaran. And go ahead. The mic is yours.
Okay, it's my distinct pleasure to introduce Dr. Murthy. Dr. Murthy is a very accomplished person. I feel honored always to stand next to her. And I always make sure that I stand on her right side. So that it's always a good thing which I've learned. She is at the New York Medical College School of Public Health. She's a physician and an activist. And she has been the recipient of several awards. Dr. Murthy is the NGO co-representative of MWIA to the United Nations, and she recently published a book called The Women's Global Health and Human Rights, published by the Jones and Bartlett, and if you are going to the Jones and Bartlett booth, you will be able to see that. And she is the recipient of the 2009 Mid-Career Award, which is awarded by the International Health Section. And she serves as APHA Chair on Women's Rights. She is a governing counselor of the American Public Health Association representing the International Health Section, and she's also the program chair for the next conference and the subsequent ones. So she is a very powerful woman.
Oh, please.
I present to you Dr. Murthy.
Thank you, Dr. Sankaran. So basically, thank you so much for your talk, and I just would like to acknowledge my dear friend and colleague, Deborah Viola, who worked with me on this paper, and also Dr. Arno, who is my colleague and friend, and some of our doctoral students. Here I see Kristen, I see Miranda, she's hiding behind. And thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. And one of the things, just to say, no relationships to disclose, except that I'm married and have a kid, and have friends. Okay, now, just to, talk as to what Dr. Sankaran said is, and again, I may digress a little from this because I don't want to make it repetitive, women live longer than men. But one of the biggest challenges we have is, especially when we're talking globally, there is a groundbreaking article by Dr. Amartya Sen, who is one of the leading Nobel laureates, in that it says, 100,000 women are missing, more than a million women are missing. That means these women were even killed before they were ever born. So when we're talking about challenges for health, especially NCDs or non-communicable diseases, or even communicable diseases, they even start pre-birth. So that's something we need to be aware of. And one of the things I would really like to focus on is, let's hope the mouse does not run away. It's not. Okay, gender-based inequalities. A lot of times, women are ill-treated because they're women, or they're men, it's a girl child. And we can see that because kids are always, the girl children are the ones who will be bringing water, so they're left out of school. So again, just to say that when you're born as a woman in many societies, you're born with a chip on your shoulder. We are not bashing men, but we just want to make that clear that this is something we are born with, like it's a burden you're facing. So the learning objectives of this are, we're going to discuss the link between women's health and factors which influence their health status during their lifespan, and why the term women's health is society's wealth. Just to piggyback on what Dr. Sankaran said, because the economic advantages are really great. And also, what are the policies and recommendations which are there? So, basically, and you can see our references which are down. So, annually, 10 to 20 million women suffer from preventable reproductive health illnesses. And the reason I have that bullet up there is because women, a lot of societies are just looked on as procreators. But they're just like, once they fall off the graph, because I'm not talking about IVF, I'm not talking about being a surrogate carrier, but I'm talking technically in the reproductive ages of 15 through 45 without any intervention and without technology. After that, it's like, okay, you're there because your job is over. But the thing about women is we have unique challenges at different ages of life. So what you have as an adolescent, you may not have in your 30s or 40s or 50s. And then, this is 72% of youth living with HIV/AIDS worldwide are young women. And the former Secretary General Kofi Annan said that AIDS has a woman's face. Even now, this is due to gender inequality. And I know you'll say that, hey, he had a slide that breast cancer is not the leading cause, but please look at that. aged 20 to 59 years in high income countries is one of the leading cancer killers. So again, it depends on where you are, because again, in developing countries, you may not have a mammogram to go for diagnosis. So this data is really based on what we have in high income countries. And of course, just to say that we all know the heart disease is the leading killer of women, because our hearts are broken. So HIV, now one of the biggest challenges is HIV/AIDS, even today. And then unplanned pregnancies, because there's an unmet need of contraceptives. This is a term used because the need for contraceptives is not met, so it's kind of a term which is used as an unmet need of contraceptives. And there is insufficient or lack of antenatal and postnatal care, which is really a challenge, lack of skilled birth attendants. Tuberculosis is a major problem among women and also among men, but we're focusing on women, and this is globally. Then we have, you know, cancer. Then you have violence against women. And this starts even before a girl child is born. So this is one of the top health challenges faced. And chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Now, there was a study actually in China which showed that women got cancer, lung cancer, not because they were smokers, but because they were cooking over these stoves. And there was no ventilation. For example, if we decided to barbecue here and close the door, can you imagine the havoc it would play? Like we say that nobody can go, I mean, the lady standing there, suppose you act as a marshal and say, nobody can get out of the room because everybody's going to stay here while we start a fire and start cooking. So lack of, you know, proper ventilation leads to problems. Now, again, you can see that how women are distributed by age group in the regions. This is from the United Nations Population Division, so it just tells you the distribution of women. And then again, the leading causes of death for women, this is according to the WHO. Again, this is worldwide. So again, just to reiterate what Dr. Sankaran said, that, and if you look at this, it's very interesting that the WHO has said ischemic heart disease and hypertensive heart disease. They've kind of, you know, differentiated it. And the other thing is, this may seem strange to some of us living here, diarrheal diseases, yet many women still do succumb to diarrheal diseases because they don't have the privilege of drinking the water you and I are drinking here. Like, that's a big issue we have. And then, again, respiratory infections due to pollution. So these are some of the leading causes of death for women worldwide. And again, this is looking at low-income countries. You can see how the status awarded to the disease here has changed. So the first here is lower respiratory infections because they're exposed to so much pollution, and you can see that malaria. The previous slide did not have malaria because this table is for worldwide, and this has malaria. And unfortunately, malaria is getting to be a major problem. And then again, middle-income countries, you see how it changes. It's stroke, IHD, COPD, and malaria does not even factor in this. The reason when we were putting together this presentation, my colleagues and I, we wanted to have this difference so that we try to get the picture of what's going on. And you can see this, middle-income countries, you can see stomach cancer. They don't say colon cancer, they say stomach cancer. And then high-income countries, Alzheimer's. Do you think women in low- and middle-income countries have no Alzheimer's? But it's not recognized. It's not documented, right? And diabetes. You can see diabetes is there in so many places. So basically, just a brief slide as to what we did. We reviewed a lot of literature of high and low income countries, and then we also looked at the variables. And these are some of the countries we looked at. And one of the things I wanted to tell you, only the second time in the history of the United Nations General Assembly, that last year in September 2011, did the General Assembly address for two whole days the issue of non-communicable diseases or chronic diseases, because there is such a burden. Now, It's like one in at least 4 to 5 people, whether it's male or female, and this I'm talking generally about males and females, are affected by chronic diseases. And a lot of these are preventable. Like, you know, it's about where you live or how you work out. And it's easy to say, yeah, you need to work out. But the thing is, if you're living where bullets are zinging all over, people are running with machetes, do you think you could go out and exercise? Or if you're carrying water to and fro, where do you have the time to exercise? So these are some of the things. When we start looking at this, we also look at the social disparities and the gender inequalities. And this is something that women and men are affected differently by the same disease. And unfortunately, there's not too much research done on women having the same disease, I mean the progression of the disease in women, as there is in men. So that's kind of, it's not that one shoe fits all. That's something we need to remember as practitioners, whether you're a clinician, a public health educator, or a practitioner of public health, or anybody who's interested in health, that there's nothing called one shoe fits all. Because unfortunately, that's one of the biggest challenges we are facing. And the other biggest challenge we have is when we're looking at the Millennium Development Goals, which were drafted by the 189 member states of the United Nations in 2000, and this is 2012, guess which of the MDGs are lagging behind? 3, that talks about women's empowerment, and 5, which is improving maternal health or reducing maternal mortality. So again, there is so much of a skewed distribution of the data that these are some of the issues we are facing. And again, every year, as I told you, millions of children are taken out of school to get married, take care of their families, and give birth. So early pregnancy is another challenge because they are children themselves. If a girl, I think on the records, there's a child of 8 years who was pregnant. Or, you know, children who are subjected to violence. There was another record by the UN that a child of 2 weeks, not 2 months, 2 weeks, was subjected to the horrific practice of female genital mutilation. What does a child of 2 weeks know that she has to be mutilated? And this was in Yemen. And still there are like over 1.6 million girls and women who are subjected to this horrific practice every year. So what I'm just trying to say is these are really the challenges. Because they have, so that's why there's so many people working at grassroots and together. And one of the things where we have forums like these is we talk and see what we can do about it. And then one of the other biggest challenges we have is gender is so much as linked to social and cultural norms. And you talked about the culture is the food. I mean, so food also what we eat and how women are perceived. Like, a lot of people say, now why do you have to go for a checkup? My mother never had one. My grandmother didn't have one. They had children at home. So again, this is so hard, these biases which need to be eliminated. And some of the issues we have are sex-selective abortions. That's why I said it starts at the beginning. And young children are often fed less than boys. In a camp in Bangladesh, refugee camp, a mother had a boy and a girl, twins. Guess who was fed more? And not the girl. And the girl eventually died. Because she said, when she was asked, she said, oh, but he's going to, be the carrier of the name. So he's the one who's going to be responsible for the family name going forth. So the girl died because she was starved in order to give her brother more. And again, you just talked about women are underpaid, they're also underemployed, and this is another graph which just tells you the life expectancy differences and between the countries. You can see East and South Africa, low income, middle income, and high income countries. And then, so basically what we need to do is we also must address not only the biological differences but also the gender-based inequalities. And we really need to involve men when looking at policies for women. Because they need to understand is if you harm a woman, it's like you're sitting on a tree and you're cutting the trunk of the tree and thinking you're not going to fall down. But hey, you're going to fall. So don't cut the tree. So I think, you know, a woman is a tree because she shelters and looks after her family and the society. So that's something we really need to talk about, is when we are looking at all these things, we need to look at the environment in which the woman lives, what is to be done. And these are a list of our references, and this is the contact information. And we would like to acknowledge Anna West, who is our doctoral student and who did a lot of research for this. And so thank you. And I think I kept to time, right? Thank you.